This is Skip Cook, Chair. We'll call the meeting of the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics to order, and welcome members who are present and any guests who are here in person or on the telephone. As we start, I will announce that Gerald Macbeth has been selected by Supreme Court Justice Winfrey to fill the public member position that was formerly held by Lee Holmes. So welcome, Jerry, for that. We're still waiting for another letter from the Supreme Court Justice on another position. It is now 2:06 p.m., and we are January 19, 2023. And Jackie, are we ready to begin recording? All right, then Jerry, I'll ask you to take roll.
Senator Gary Stevens.
Here.
Senator Lukey Tobin.
Here.
Member Skip Cook.
Here.
Member Connor Thomas, are you on telephonically with us?
On telephonically, I'm here.
Thank you.
I am here.
Member Joyce Anderson.
Here.
Member Deb Fancher.
Here.
Member Jerry Macbeth.
Here.
With that, we have a quorum to conduct business with two senators present and five public members.
All right, we will proceed. Let me ask if there's anyone online for the meeting other than Member Connor Thomas. Hearing none, we'll proceed with who is here. I would indicate that Jackie Yeagle as our administrative assistant and Jerry Anderson as our administrator for the committee are present. We would, at the outset, ask committee members and guests to identify themselves each time that they speak for the benefit of individuals who are on telecom and in the audience, and for the benefit of Jackie, who is keeping minutes. Today, we have an agenda for the full committee, which we expect to last about 45 minutes. First item is approve the agenda, which is tab N, and I would ask for removal to approve the agenda.
This is Deb Fancher, so moved.
Jerry Macbeth, seconding.
Are there any objections? We'll move to approval of minutes, and there are minutes at tab O, the first ones being the minutes of the September 22nd full committee meeting, and I would request a motion to approve.
Deb Fancher, so moved.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, we will ask the same with regard to the Senate subcommittee minutes at tab O.
You said Senate, it's House.
It says Senate on my agenda.
It says House on the...
On the minutes? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. That's the House and, on September 22nd. Were you making a motion, Joyce?
So moved.
Any objection? Hearing none, then those are approved. Next item is public comment. Is there anybody present in person or online that would like to comment before we proceed? Hearing none, we'll move to an annual subject, and that is election of officers for the subcommittees, and that's tab P. We can only proceed with the officers for the Senate subcommittee because the House has not appointed its members here yet. So with regard to the Senate subcommittee, I would open nominations for the position of chair.
Deb Fancher,
I would nominate Skip Cook as chair of the Senate subcommittee.
Are there any other nominations? Hearing none, Jerry, do we want to vote on that, or do we want to make the nomination for vice chair first?
We can vote either separately or together.
Let's go ahead and do it together. So or entertain.
One right after the other, when you nominated the other position. But if you want to do chair now, we can do that.
Okay, let's go ahead and do the chair.
Okay. roll call then for voting for the Senate Chair with the Skip Cook. Member Deb Fancher?
Yes.
Member Jerry McBeth?
Yes.
Member Connor Thomas?
Yes.
Member Skip Cook?
Yes.
Member Joyce Anderson?
Yes.
Senator Gary Stevens?
Yes.
Member Lukey Tobin?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Senator Lukey Tobin. With that, we have...
All right, we'll declare that matter closed and move to the Vice Chair then. Is there a nomination for Vice Chair?
This is Deb Fancher. I would nominate Connor Thomas.
Are there any other nominations for Senate Committee Vice Chair? Hearing none, let's go ahead and vote on that.
Okay. Senator Lukey Tobin?
Yes.
Member Deb Fancher?
Yes.
Member Gerald McBeth?
Yes.
Member Connor Thomas?
I'll vote for myself, yes.
Member Skip Cook?
Yes.
Member Joyce Anderson?
Yes.
Senator Gary Stevens?
Yes.
With that, then, we have that same seven members voting in favor of Connor Thomas as Vice Chair.
All right. We'll proceed on to the Chair Staff Report.
Mr. Chair, if I could just make a point of information. I know it's in the packet, but the chair that's selected by the Senate subcommittee shall chair the full committee beginning the first day of the regular session in odd number of years, which would then be you.
Right.
And then when we do have a House chair, the House chair of the subcommittee would chair the full committee the beginning day of the first regular session in even numbered years. So I just wanted to make that clear.
Right. So that, yeah, that's the way we will proceed. Thank you. All right, Jerry, we're ready to look at the chair staff report.
I'll refer the committee members to tab Q to the staff report, select committee on legislative ethics. These are select informal advice under AS 2460-158. Does not include any routine matters, which of course is many, many. But if you have questions concerning any of the pages that I've included or the individual items that I've included, I'd entertain those at this point.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I only have a couple typos, and I don't know if we need to do those right now. But first one's under campaign related. The first question on the very first line where it says, legislative employee may not file a letter of intent. Should say of intent, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then in the next one where they're in the second sentence of the question itself, campaign has two I's in it. I just wanted to point those two out.
Thank you. Anything else with regard to the management log?
I have a question, and it's because I'm unclear. On the second page, a conflict of interest, may I sell tickets for a fundraiser on the Capitol? The advisory opinion is yes, if it's for a recognized non-political charitable organization. And I guess this AS-24, which I don't have in front of me, 60-30, gives the full list of non-political charitable organizations. Or does it? I'm, for example, if I have a fundraiser for WWF, I would call it a non-political charitable organization to raise money to preserve species in Africa or Alaska, for that matter. But others might challenge it as, in fact, a political charitable organization, depending on the position that WWF has taken on issues over the year. So I'm unclear about the advisory opinion.
Statutory language is what's being just repeated there from that section under 030. So if you go to that section under 030 in the tab that you have the booklet, the new booklet that you received, you're able to look at that specific language. And so, of course, the informal advice does not extend from the administrator, does not extend to determining each and every organization, whether it's a recognized non-political charitable organization. But if it fits under that, of course, it would be allowed selling tickets. But that's the statutory language that legislative members or legislative employees would have to look to make sure that's okay in the Capitol.
Easily, but I can check it later, and I don't want to take up more time on it now. So,
okay.
Anything? And so if you look at the statutory language, you have to look back to 2 to say it does not prohibit, and then it gives a whole list of items that are exceptions to that, and one of them is that sale of the tickets.
There's no list.
There's no list of what is a...
Yes.
What recognized is. Non-political charitable organization.
Yes. So it's a judgment call. Okay.
As many things are, I think that's true.
Anything else on that?
I apologize, Chair. Cook, I do want to recognize that there is a 501c3 status with the IRS that does outline what a recognized nonprofit would be that cannot engage in political action up to 25%. Once they hit that 25% mark or more, they do tip into a political organization and they will no longer be recognized as a charitable organization. So I do think there are some regulations within U.S. code that does dictate what a recognized nonpartisan charitable organization is.
So that's U.S. IRS code. That's federal, and this is Alaska statutes.
Correct. So I would be curious if that definition is carried.
Well, I'm sure it may very well be in terms of, but it's not. There's not clarity here, right? Because we have thousands, hundreds of thousands of charitable non-political organizations.
Correct. I believe 7,000.
Yeah. So.
I think we can move on, Jim.
Okay. Any others that the committee would like to discuss? If not, I want to go ahead and go to our tab that has it following that management log, which is still under Q, which is the disclosures file. And for the summary of 2022, you can look at those numbers, but I think it's better to look at the disclosures filed 2019 to 2022. So if you skip over that page and go to the comparison year by year, you'll see the items that have made quite a difference. And I think we can attribute some of that to the COVID situation that we had. And in particular, I'm looking at gifts of travel and hospitality, both by legislators and by legislative staff. Big decrease from 2019 even through 2022 in the amount of gifts of travel and hospitality, especially hard hit in the years 20 and 21 for those. And so even with the bounce back this year, we're still at roughly a half of what we were in 20 and 19. The other one that is more puzzling to me is the membership on a board of directors. At the top of that list, And that shows a decrease from 2021 to 2022. And that is puzzling to staff just because we've been emphasizing the membership on a board of directors needs to be disclosed to the office in a lot of our newsletters and explain that even, you know, during when you're not in session, that you still need to do that within 30 days of membership on there. And the only thing that we've emphasized along with that, of course, is if it's read across the floor membership on a board, you do not need to disclose it to the ethics committee. And so that if there were those that were being disclosed and they were also read across the floor, that would be duplicative. And so that's unnecessary that they do that. But the decrease overall with both legislators and legislative staff, we can't explain it. And so my course would be to just continue to emphasize that in the newsletters that we have ethics opinion from 1306, designated as 1306, where the committee looked at membership of an organization and laid out, and it was very broad language. And so things such as your condo association, your church council, charitable organizations, nonprofit, for-profit, if you're on one of those boards that exercises any of those powers, you need to disclose that with the committee. And so we're going to continue just to emphasize that in our newsletters. But again, that's that puzzles me. And I guess I'm asking for any input from the committee members.
Mr. Chairman. Chairman Cook. You know, I don't think it's too shocking. Senator Stevens here. I don't think it's too shocking considering COVID. You know, people didn't want to be on committees. They didn't want to go into public meetings. So it might be interesting to see this year now that we've seen the throwing everything out the window and we're here in the Capitol shaking hands and meeting with lots of people. It might be interesting to see if that increases this year. But I think that's might be an explanation. I mean, I certainly did not participate in things that I participated in before COVID.
Jerry, this is Deb Vancher. I have a question about something you said where you said read across the floor. Could you explain to me when you say read across the floor, if somebody does say that they're a member of a church group in a meeting, does that prohibit them from ever having to just say that again?
No. Read across the floor means that, for example, President Stevens would appoint them to a committee, to an organization where the legislature is represented, and then they do not have to disclose that representation on that board, even though it would fit the definition of a board, because it's been read across the floor, legislative related, they do not need to go ahead and again file it with our office.
At any point?
So, not while they're a member of that.
This is Jerry McBeth. Jerry, this is difficult. Because I've, failed to adhere strictly to this because, you know, I thought membership on a board of directors was, you know, a business definition, whereas I'm a treasurer of a church. So how all of a sudden is that, and then I'm on a set in the session, I'm an elder in the church. So these are not conventional usages. So I think that all of the examples that you can come up with are going to be helpful in increasing the reportage.
Right, right. And, so, you know, if you looked at the handouts that we had today, you know, it included those examples of what organizations that, for example, that people would have to report on. And so when we did the ethics training, we had those handouts, and they have all of those listed, the different variety of items, and it's not an inclusive list of every organization that where you need to report. But it does have the different variety of things, and so yeah, you may want to look at that. And it really is, you know, whether you're supervisory, managerial status, and you may as a treasurer not have those, and you may not have advisory powers on that by being virtue of being the treasurer, or you may not be investigatory. And those are the four powers. If you exercise any one of those as a board, two or more members, then you need to disclose it. For example, a one-member LLC is not two or more members, and so you don't have to disclose it. But if you have two or more members in an LLC and they exercise one of those powers, they need to disclose that. Yes.
Lukey Tobin, for the record, through the chair. I echo Senator Stevens' insight. I myself went from a membership of six in 2019 to being participating in two organizations this year. I am also the board development chair of one of the organizations I currently sit on the board for, and we're struggling to recruit. People are tired and burnt out and overwhelmed, and there just seems to be a shifting. I think the Great Resignation is one thing that we've seen in the business sector. I think there's something very similar in the service sector as well.
Well, that's good. Yeah, because if you notice, we had from 2021 even to 2022, you know, it was pretty constant through that year, but then it dropped 2022. And so, but it may be just fatigue, board fatigue and activity fatigue that may be doing that. I know personally we've talked about your disclosure, so I was aware of that, but yeah, I'm going to attribute four of those to you.
I think you can.
Mr. Chair, this is Joyce Anderson, if I may comment. Deb, what Jerry was talking about earlier, too, about an appointment that was on the floor, like let's say Senator Stevens is saying that one of the senators is being appointed to an NCSL committee. You know, so then that's where the more of those type of appointments are the ones that we're talking about versus what you were. I just want to give you an example.
Carry on.
All right. The next, I want to make sure that everyone got to see the 2022 public decisions booklet and the 2022 advisory opinion booklet. We only had one public decision that got published and only one advisory opinion from the committee that was actually published from the last year. So they were very thin, but they were distributed to all legislators, and they should have been distributed to all the public members also. And that is in accordance with our rules of procedure and the statutory language. We also have the 2023 Standards of Conduct Handbook that we have produced. And in accordance with the committee's discussion, we did not print one for each and every employee and legislator, but rather we had printed a single copy for every legislative office. And so they should have gotten distributed to the office one. And it is online, and so anyone who wants one online or does want an actual physical copy, we're giving them one. But we're not, for example, providing them to every member when they're doing the ethics training. Ethics training is the next item on the agenda, and I can talk about that. I don't have any particular material where we have numbers on that. If we're ready to move on.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And our ethics training, we had training in December that was accompanied by a little bit of a snow issue in Anchorage. And so we had a fewer number than what we had. And I know Deb Fancher attended that one of our public members. And maybe she can make some comment about what she saw at the ethics training there.
I just felt like Jerry didn't have enough time to do what he needed to be done. And as I mentioned earlier today, there are a number of people serving in Juneau that have had other positions in other governmental agencies, and the questions that they were asking Jerry, I felt, were very, very good. The problem is he ran out of time. So with time being finite, I think that the training was excellent. I just don't think, as a retired teacher, that he had enough time to do what needed to be done.
And those sessions were 3 hours as opposed to the 2 hours and 15 minutes that we had this morning with the returning legislators. And, you know, of course, we had that limited opportunity for NCSL presenters to present their material, and only on limited days. And we took advantage of the limited days that they had, the one in December and the one in January, for them to present. And so we're relying a lot now on just the online, taking the online versions of what they've done. And they're watching that as the alternative to those in-person sessions. And so I guess I'll leave it at that. And I do want to appreciate once again Senator Stevens working with us in terms of getting the coordination between our ethics training for returning legislators and the luncheon that they had at noon that all virtually all legislators were going to attend. And I think we kind of met that seamlessly and still got our training in for our returning legislators. And I think they met the requirement for the ethics training for the year, all those that attended.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stevens, I really want to applaud you for the presentation today. It was just excellent. And I think often, going to maybe more time, I'm a little concerned about that because I think everyone appreciated it. Everyone was with us. Everyone understood what was going on. You can go into so much detail that some of us, this is my 23rd year here, and I've heard it a lot. And so I think a couple of hours is maybe 2 hours, 15 minutes is fine, and I'd be concerned if we made it much longer than that. But this was excellent. I really appreciate the two presenters from NCSL. They did a tremendous job. Particularly the humor, I thought, was great.
And as chair, I'd like to compliment Jerry on the way he handled the shortage of time also. I think that he gave them the essence of what they needed to know there, and they were all returning, so they've had the training before. But rather than putting us over time or going into more detail, I think it was well handled this morning.
Thank you for that.
All right, I think we're ready to move on to the budget. That is tab R. So if everybody turn to tab R. And Jerry, do you want to explain the budget, where we are?
I've included where we were at as of the 9th of this month in our budgetary process and what expenditures that we have had. I'm not going to go into any detail regarding that unless there's specific questions on that. Appear to have sufficient funds to run the rest of our fiscal year, and I don't know any other comments to make concerning that, other than we had one development that where we thought we were going to have an outside contract with another law firm, and we think that that's going to be largely eliminated just because of the developments that we've had with those particular cases that we were dealing with. And so I think that is going to eliminate whatever crunch we thought might be possible with our budget. And I've also included then our budget for fiscal year 2024. I don't have any further comments regarding that itself either, other than we always have the 4.9% vacancy factor, and with two people, we don't have vacancy very often. One of whom's part-time, Jackie, who I value very, very, very much.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair, this is Joyce Anderson. So, Jerry, you're saying our budget is adequate then for the next fiscal year?
Yes, I think that it is. They've incorporated, the statutory raises that were included. And so I think that we've only had small increases in the amounts, for travel and our other items outside the personnel services, but we continue to do that. We continue to try and upgrade our equipment to keep it current that's in the ethics office with the small amount that we do have.
All right, if there's no other comments on the budget, let's move on to the contract report, item 9.
Okay, and so I gave away part of that already, that we approved a contract for Mr. Fitzgerald, Kevin Fitzgerald, as an outside counsel, and that was in the amount of $15,000. As of this morning, based on what I have heard from our investigator, who says that it's probably not going to be necessary to do that, we're going to have only minimal expense under that contract, and so they're only encumbering us for $2,000 under that one, and so largely, that contract's going to disappear, and it's going to be a small amount, less than probably the $2,000 that I've left encumbering our budget.
Okay.
and with regard to the other, we do need to make one modification just to extend the contract for Brent Cole. You may be aware that Brent Cole is handling the lawsuit that's filed by former Senator Laura Reinbolt against the committee, and that has not disappeared like we thought that it would. We're hopeful that that will be dismissed by the judge in fairly short order. But it continues at this time, and so that's the other one where we've had some expenditure with outside counsel.
Jerry, this is Connor Thomas. Is the motion pending before the judge right now for dismissal?
Yes. Yes, and there's been a number of requests for delay, requests for to file amended complaint, and I don't want to comment further. I think that's maybe for Brent Cole, because I'm hearing it secondhand.
But as far as you know, the motion work's done.
Yes, yes, I believe that it's really just a matter of the court acting upon it.
Okay, thank you.
Skip. Skip your question.
There's a brief at ease.
Brief at ease, I think, is in order with that. I know that you wanted to do public comment with the committee, and we went past that.
Right,
but we do have public before the Senate subcommittee, but that may not be appropriate given the issue that you're dealing with. Or maybe it will, but there is that opportunity.
I've got to go back to the floor as soon as they chime us back in. We're just adding that in. I feel like.
All right, we're back on. Is there any objection by the committee to going back to public comment so that Representative Hannah can address the committee? Hearing none, you're welcome to. I think that mic's live.
Thank you, members of the Ethics Committee. For the record, Representative Sarah Hannon here, commenting, formerly a member of the committee, right now in limbo. My comments are with regard to an investigation that was done on a House ethics complaint. And I just want to share my observations that I wish I had used my teacher brain and asked more questions about the process that was used to contact people in the investigation. And I hope that perhaps you will formally on the record ask the investigator. We were led at committee review to believe that we had people non-compliant and non-responsive to the investigator. When only one means of contact was ever attempted, and it was attempted repeatedly, a phone in this building was, my understanding is that the same phone number was used repeatedly for each of the people to contact, and no one called them back. But it was not during the legislative sessions. No other written communications were ever attempted with the people to be investigated. No emails, no letters, no alternative phones, no district office phone calls where employees might be working on those days. And that led us to several months of delay of a case to be investigated, which in turn costs us money and time and led to a request for additional authorization, which I was supportive and advocated, and feel very frustrated that much of that could have been truncated if additional means of contact were done, because my understanding is as soon as a written communication via email was made, the people responded immediately. And so my public comment is that I did not feel like it was the job of the committee to ask the investigator, how are you attempting to do this? What are the multiple means you're using? But I would ask that either we do that or not. And I am pleased to hear that perhaps the additional authorization money that we made in November isn't needed, but it's a delay of many months that my conclusion is we're needless, that this could have been concluded. The investigation could have been concluded months ago if what were logical obligations of calling a district office or sending a written communication via email or a certified letter was attempted. And with that, I will close my comments.
Thank you. We appreciate that. And I will, as chair, ask Jerry to report back to us after you have checked on the procedures of the investigator and let us know that that's verified information.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Yes.
This is Joyce Anderson. I have a question. You had indicated, and maybe I missed this in your statement, that there was only one means of contact, which was phone. Was it a legislative phone number that you are referring to, or
yes, here in this building, but it was during the summer?
Is not the legislative phone number here also forwarded to your legislative
offices?
Not
automatically. Any office, it would be up to each office to forward them.
Okay.
Now, I cannot answer if my staff did not answer my, did not have them forward, I would be very frustrated with them, but it is not a requirement. I do not have multiple offices because I represent the capital city. But many legislators have a district office, so they have multiple phone numbers. They're all published on the same site. It says during session, during interim, and my understanding is only the Capitol office phone numbers were ever attempted to be as the means of communication and contact.
Okay. All right. I guess I was always under the impression that they were forwarded, but I'm glad you clarified that for me. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Hammond. Now we'll go back to our agenda. We're down to other business, and Jerry realized that he hadn't put on the agenda a report about the COGO conference that occurred in early December. Connor and I were the only two that attended. So, Connor, you want to give your comments on COGO, and then I'll make some if you haven't covered them.
Well, you know, once again, I thought it was a great conference, as it usually is. I think a couple of things that were very relevant to our situation, one had to do with public updates of complaints. In other words, there were some jurisdictions that talked about what happened when a complaint had been public. And they made a real effort to continue to update on their website what was going on with the complaint. In other words, if it was still pending and when it and give some sort of a timeline on when it might be resolved. So I thought that was interesting, and it's something that we don't really do. And I know that there are times when there are complaints with the length of time that it takes to resolve a complaint. A lot of those have to do with, you know, legitimate issues, but people sometimes are not aware of it. So I thought it's something that we could consider. One of the other things that came up that I thought was interesting had to do with Massachusetts, which just like we do, had historically prohibited Zoom meetings for certain types of complaints or not just the complaint, but in terms of the analysis of the complaint and a decision by the committee to proceed or not proceed, although they have now decided that they are going to allow that, and they've developed a process by which they consider best practices to try to avoid confidential information becoming public. You know, I don't know if there's a real interest here for us to do that, but given the difficulty sometimes of putting together a meeting, I think it's an option at least is, you know, worth looking at. One of the other interesting aspects were a number of people that talked about legislative training and ways that to try to keep people engaged. And, of course, these were people that are younger than Skip and I that were there, and they use a variety of social media devices, platforms to try to keep their training interesting to what's becoming to them, at least for us, a younger audience. And so they were using TikTok and YouTube, and were encouraging people to take a look at the product that they produced using those type of strategies, and indicating that they felt that they got good participation and interest from that. And of course, some of these jurisdictions, the training requirements are much broader than what we have. Some of them are training firefighters and state workers. And as the guy said, he had to train firefighters in New York City. They gave him a half an hour before the shift started in the firehouse. And most of the people, of course, didn't want to be there. So he was forced to come up with a method to try to engage their interest during the period of time when they were just trying to get the hell out of it. So anyway, I thought, as usual, with a good committee, they every year have an ethics update, which is they gather all the relevant ethics decisions from across the country and present those. There was enough of those that there were two different sessions that both Skip and I attended that brought us information from other jurisdictions. So once again, anybody that has not been to Colville, it's worth going. So those are my thoughts. Skip, I don't know if you had any.
Yeah, I'll add a little bit. Colville includes pretty much all of North America, with occasionally some visitors from other countries. I think we had Australians there this year, and maybe one other country, but a number of many Canadians, some Mexican, and all of North America. And it is called the Council on Legislative Ethics Laws. So it is not limited to states. It's limited to, it includes states, counties, cities, and any other organizations that, if it's governmental, have an interest in ethics. So it's pretty broad and comprehensive. We are very unique, we've learned over the years at COBOL, in the formulation of our committee structure. Not many include both public and legislative members. We're unique in the sense that we are only dealing with legislative ethics here. Many of those other ones deal with both legislative and executive ethics, but we're limited, and yet we have a more expansive committee and one that's inclusive of legislators and public members, which I think is probably about the best composition I've heard at COGO over the years that I've gone there. So we're somewhat unique that way. I did bring back Massachusetts State Ethics Commission guidelines for remote adjudicatory proceedings, and that's what Connor was referring to. They have a 9-page program. I brought that back so Jerry could take a look at it, and he said he'd probably make copies and distribute that to the committee. We have at times had difficulties scheduling because we have to have always in person and couldn't do our final adjudications electronically. That has advantages and disadvantages. I think the committee recognizes that we prefer to meet in person for those final adjudications, but on the other hand, if it's not possible, we don't have an option. So this might give some kind of an option. So, I would recommend, and it's unfortunate, we were going to have quite an attendance at COGO this year, and both Deb and Joyce were going to be there, and Jackie was going to be there originally, and it worked out because of weather and other emergencies and situations. Only Connor and I made it, but next year, that conference will be in Kansas City, and might be a little easier to travel to than Montreal. So that's it on COGO, unless there are any questions.
And Mr. Chair, I would just like, this is Joyce Anderson, I would just like to add that the legislators on the committee are welcome to attend too.
Well, of course.
So not just public members.
Right.
And the month?
It's December. It's usually the first week in December.
We are down to item 11, which is adjourn. If there's no other business before the committee, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
This is Deb Vanter, so moved.
Any objection? We are gaveled up. It's 3:01 p.m. And Jackie, you ready to start recording?
I hit record. I'm still not getting the playback team, so I don't have time yet.
All right. And Jerry, will you take roll, please?
Senator Gary Stevens.
Here.
Senator Luki Tobin.
Here.
Member Skip Cook.
Here.
Member Connor Thomas. We're having you telephonically.
Here.
There he is.
Member Joyce Anderson.
Here.
Member Deb Fancher.
Here.
Member Jerry McGrath.
Here.
We think we have a forum to conduct business with all members present.
All right, and I would like to welcome those who are here and anybody online. Can we have a report as to whether there is anybody online other than Connor Thomas? All right. If there's nobody online, again, I would ask people to identify themselves each time they speak for the benefit of those who are online and for the benefit of the record. And today we have an agenda for the Senate subcommittee that's expected to last less than 1 hour, including an anticipated executive session. So first item of business will be approval of the agenda, which is tab 2 in the Senate subcommittee packet. I entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
Deb Fancher, so moved.
Any objection? Hearing none. The agenda is approved. We'll move to public comment. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to comment before this committee at this time? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to go into executive session to discuss matters which by law must remain confidential under AS 2460-010 and Uniform Rule 22B regarding executive sessions and Rules of Procedure, Section 5. Executive sessions and discussions of matters the immediate knowledge of which would adversely affect the finances of a governmental unit, and discussion of subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation and character of a person. So we have some business that requires us to move to executive session, and I would entertain a motion.
Chair, you make that. I move to go into executive session.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, we will move to executive session and be off the record until we're set up. Item number five, other business. Is there any other business to come before the committee? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. This is Joyce Anderson.
Any objection? Hearing none, we are adjourned.